Good afternoon and welcome back to the Army's Artificial Intelligence Integration Center podcast. Once again, I'm Lieutenant Colonel David Paddock, and I'm your host for this episode. Over the last three episodes, we've discussed what AI is, how it works, and why it matters to the Army now. Today, we're going to take a pragmatic approach and discuss what leaders get wrong about AI. Joining me today is the Center's Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Director, Sergeant Major Harold Sampson. Sergeant Major, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here today. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Yeah, first of all, sir, thank you for having me. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm the Center Sergeant Major. I've been an intelligence professional for 26 years. I would say that I'm a data enthusiast, so super excited to get stationed here with you guys. And I'd also say that I'm a change-oriented individual who really enjoys kind of leading through organizational change and strife.
Well, that's outstanding, and it's great to have you here. And I think that data interest is really going to be valuable. So unlike prior episodes where we talked about the inner workings of AI, today we're going to pivot a little bit and discuss how organizations implement artificial intelligence. There was a recent study from MIT suggesting that 95% of corporate AI projects fail to deliver measurable value or in many cases even reach production. And that's a really staggering number for a technology that everyone claims is going to change the way that we process information. And that's had a lot of financial capital invested behind it. So how do we beat the odds as the Army to be a part of the 5% that actually succeeds? Is there a mental model that leaders can use as they approach AI and work to implement it into their units and organizations?
Yeah, I think there's a quote that frames this entire conversation perfectly. AI is not a silver bullet. It's a rucksack filled with power tools. At the end of the day, you still need people trained to carry it.
And can you break that down and elaborate on that a little bit for me?
Yeah, so think of about a silver bullet. Silver bullet's magic. You fire it, the problem's solved. That's how a lot of people kind of treat AI right now. They think you can buy the technology, flip a switch, and then productivity is going to double overnight. And frankly, it's not even close to what's true.
But the power tools in the rucksack, that's a different approach to thinking about it.
Yeah, it kind of implies weight, work, and probably most importantly, it implies having some skill. If I kind of hand you an industrial-grade power drill and you've never built anything, you're definitely not going to build a house. You're probably going to drill a hole possibly in your own foot. You'll definitely make a lot of noise and dust. But you're not going to make progress.
And that's certainly not what we're after. It seems like what we're trying to do is find a way to use those tools effectively. So there's a gap between what we have now, which is all of these tools, and to your earlier point, making sure that we've got the soldiers who are trained on how to use those tools starts to bridge that gap. So it's not a plug and play solution. And there's a growth curve that's associated to it. And we're going to need to go through that growth curve. Is there a shortcut to that growth curve, or are there things that leaders can do inside of their organizations to prepare for that growth curve?
Absolutely. So I think this is what we call the readiness illusion. You kind of view as a leader, you kind of view AI through a lens of previous technology cycles, kind of like migrating to the cloud, installing a new version of Microsoft Office. You know, you buy the license, IT comes in, installs the package, and boom, everyone's modern by Tuesday morning. That's not accurate for AI. It's fundamentally different.
So that's a big organizational change. So the approach of saying that it's the trained soldiers that know how to use it, there's also a big leadership involvement to set conditions. If this isn't just implementing the next iterative upgrade to Outlook, there's going to be leader challenges to prepare their units for those formations, for those changes in how AI is going to impact their organizations. What can we do to start preparing those units for those types of things?
I think, have you ever heard of the 10-20-70 rule?
I have, but let's expand on it.
Okay, so AI transformation is going to be 10% technology, 20% data, and then 70% of its change management.
So that's a really high bar to cross. It's a high barrier. I really would have assumed that for artificial intelligence, because it's a technology, that it was really going to be an inverse of that, where it was going to be a smoother transition. But it sounds like there's a lot more to it in managing that change.
Yeah, absolutely. So this is kind of the trap. You hear AI, you think software, you think some digital solution that's going to, you know, magically cure all the organization's problems. But in this case, the technology is the easy part. You can rent GPUs, you can buy API access to the models. That's all off the shelf commoditized technology. But the 70%, that's business transformation, requires leadership. It's the people and the process part.
So you mentioned the 10-20-70 rule, the 10% technology, 20% data, and 70% change management. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because it seems like with AI, this is the technology of the future. That's really the smallest part of the puzzle here. How do we get after the other two aspects of this, which are data and the change management?
Okay, so I'll start with change management, because I think this is super important. It's almost where everything fails is trying to change an organization. So if you take artificial intelligence and you have a broken legacy process and you overlay it, all you've really done is exacerbated the brokenness of your organization. I mean, if you can think of a supply requisition system that was designed in 1990, it's bureaucratic, it's messy, 100 different approvals just to get anything, and it's super, super slow. So if you don't address that up front, your AI is never going to work, because it's going to go faster, but it's just going to go faster to dysfunction, if that makes any sense.
No, that makes a lot of sense. You know, I remember the transition from SAMS to GCSS and how it illuminated a lot of process flow problems that we had. But with the movement to AI and the speed that entails, it seems like it's really going to exacerbate problems even more, or potentially create problems we didn't even know were there in the first place.
So it's funny you say that. I'll tell you a little story, and it's not AI specific, but it's about the IPSE rollout. That sort of one night it didn't exist, and the next night it existed. So as a brigade CSM at the time, and about 6 weeks after we rolled it out, we were using it and understanding, one of the battalion CSMs comes to me and he's like, "Hey, Sergeant Major, I have this high-speed soldier. He's supposed to be leaving Friday. It's Wednesday." And he's like, "I've been trying to process his award for 6 weeks. Can I get it by Friday?" I'm like, "Yes, I'll track it down." They go right outside of my office and down a very small hallway is the Brigade S1. I go and I'm like, "Hey, ma'am, like, I need this award process. Where is it at?" And she's like, "I'll get it to you right now." So when it came to me, I happened to click the view tracking button. And then I saw that how many people this ARCOM had gone through. And I'll tell you, it started with an orderly room clerk and then went to a first sergeant, to a company commander. Then it went to some private in S1 shop, to his sergeant, to the sergeant first class, to the captain, then to the battalion executive assistant, battalion CSM, battalion XO, battalion commander, back to the captain in the S1 shop who routed it. I can't make this stuff up. Routed it to the brigade S1 shop, who then had a private, a sergeant first class, a master sergeant, a DA civilian, and then the brigade S1 before it ever got to the brigade commander. Now, if you could think about the hierarchy of a chain of command, it's company commander, battalion commander, brigade commander. But there's all these other people in it. So we had taken this legacy process of awards processing, which used to be done via email. You can imagine why we could never keep track of them. We put it in this digital system and it was still going super slow. So I went to the S1 and I was like, "We're not doing this anymore. All right, we're going to fundamentally change how we do actions inside of this brigade. It goes from the recommender to the company. It can hit two people on the company, and then it goes to the battalion. It can hit two people on the battalion S1 shop, and it goes to the battalion command group. Same thing in the brigade command group." And there's a lot of active resistance to this. I'll make a long story short. After many, many fights, the awards process in the brigade took less than 5 days from the time that somebody recommended it in the system to the company commander before it got to the brigade commander. And we did not go home on Friday till all the IPSE actions were complete. So what typically took 6 to 8 weeks, if we didn't lose it multiple times in the process, because if they rolled out and then we realized how broken the process was, fixed it, and now it was fast and sort of ready. But if you're not addressing like the system either before you roll out AI or during the AI rollout, you're never going to make any progress. Your system's just going to stay broken.
So it seems like this can be viewed in one of two ways. It's either a problem that you have to redo all of your systems to work with AI, or you have an opportunity to really start with a clean sheet and build the optimal system for what it is you need to accomplish. But throughout that problem, there's the reality that there's people who were working within that. And it sounded like there was some resistance to that sort of transformation. How do we go about ensuring that we're preparing our soldiers and those mid-grade leaders to be prepared for the new system to kind of smooth out some of that resistance and to ensure that they're getting that development. Because, you know, we can look at it and say that, you know, that sergeant reviewing the award when the sergeant first class is also going to look at it is redundant. But we can also say that that's how they learn how to do the job correctly. That's how they get the opportunities for artisan training. That's how they get the opportunities for mentorship, et cetera. So how do we balance those competing requirements between building an improved system and still maintaining that training model that's led to a very capable military?
Yeah, I think it's a great question, sir. And you sort of have to balance both. Right? You can't not train your people, but you can't let the training slow down everything in the organization at the same time. You really have to kind of do a readiness assessment of your organization and then figure out sort of where you are in time and space. And then specifically as it relates to rolling out AI, figure out where your quick, easy wins are going to be. And then you use that to your advantage. But you can't not train your people. In today's environment, you can't also not implement AI and try to move faster as an organization. Because as I can remember when I joined the Army, we didn't have computers. And then the platoon got one computer where you would type everything on it and roll it out. Now we're an army that everybody is automated and information overload can happen so much. Like if you're not moving fast and designing your processes to be more digital, you're not going to win today.
That's great. And I think you really kind of hinted at something else, which is, you know, the amount of data overflow that you can end up with that can be, it can be both very intimidating, but it can also be a very real problem. You know, we've talked on the podcast before about, you know, the amount of data that AI can manage. How do we go about making sure that we're leveraging that data and that we're prepared to use it, you know, from a pragmatic standpoint, you know, in a principled approach to implementing AI at the unit level?
So I think you really, again, you have to kind of assess where you are. You have to understand your data quality, understand where your people are in time and space and their skills, understand the infrastructure that you have, and then understand what your strategy is and where you're trying to go long term. And then once you answer those things, really ask yourself, are you, your organization, your data, and your strategy AI ready? If the answer is no, then okay, then let's not implement AI there. If your answer is yes, then you can redesign your strategy to get after that. But you also have to understand, like, do you understand what the technology can do and can't do? And more importantly, do your people understand what it can and can't do? Because again, it's not a magic bullet.
So having that honest assessment of where is my unit at, not really ready there, it seems like if the answer is yes, then it's a deliberate implementation. It's not a software update. It's not, you know, the quote, sprinkle some AI on it. It's much, much closer to a new equipment training and a new equipment fielding with the organization, the prep that goes into it. But you got to the other point. You said, well, if your unit's not ready for it yet, then you're not ready for it. Somewhere in there, we're going to have to get them ready, though. And it seems like that's going to be a separate set of challenges for a lot of leaders.
I think it is. And sometimes you can't try to boil the ocean. And you've got to take small steps and gain quick wins. Like, if you want to institute AI in an organization, you're probably not going to make every data flow or workflow that you have, you know, fully AI enabled on day one. You're probably going to start with something simple, like maybe actions processing. We're going to put a little AI process in there and use that to help train your people on what the system can and can't do, and then iterate your way to success to putting more and more artificial intelligence in the process to get to ultimately where you want to go. If you try to do it all on day one, you're probably just going to, I mean, you're going to be the 95% that fails to deliver any value because you've tried to do too much too quickly without slowly training your organization to get there.
So an honest self-assessment, figure out where the unit's at, come up with a plan on how to implement it. And it seems like it's a measured and deliberate approach. It seems like that's also a good way to ensure that people are using AI in safe and responsible manners, that we're approaching it from an ethical standpoint, and that we're building trust, as you said, right? There's resistance from those people in the middle who used to be part of the process. And so, I mean, that measured approach is going to allow us to build trust with them that we're not letting AI take their job away, but we're kind of letting AI do the most difficult and time-consuming parts so that we can improve the final output. So it's a better quality product.
So Sergeant Major Dan Daly used to talk about the frozen middle. I don't know if you've ever heard that. It never really made a whole lot of sense to me till we're trying to institute some new processes in the brigade and stand up what we called a data solutions group for intelligence, the IDSG. And we pulled people off of our mission to basically get onto computers and speed up our intel process. And we sped up by going really slow and upskilling this small group of people who could then bring those skills back and kind of institute some faster processes inside of our intelligence cycle. There was a lot of active resistance from the organization to get the right people in. One, middle managers didn't want to participate because they didn't see any value. Two, they thought if we were able to make the process go much faster, we wouldn't need as many, you know, both people to do the work and the leaders. And they thought it was going to result in a smaller organization. And that, frankly, just wasn't true. So how you do it in your organization, I think, it's depending on your organization. But one of the ways that we were successful with this is we sort of busted through that frozen middle by getting our leaders involved and 100% on board with where we were trying to go, and then getting our junior population to volunteer for it and wanting to be a part of it. And once we got both of those groups of population on board, the middle just kind of had to come along. And then we saw the thaw. And then once we saw that thaw, the organization moved super fast with our processes because we're able to really identify where the friction points were and then let this small team of people kind of automate all the boring stuff that you talked about that nobody really likes to do, but it's fundamental for an organization. And that's kind of the stuff that computers are good at. They're not good with, you know, the super complex task and the relationship side. So it allowed us to, what we said, automate the boring stuff once we were able to get through that frozen middle and get those middle managers on board with it. But really, it took them understanding that it wasn't a way to reduce headcount in the organization. It was really a way to make everybody faster and give them more time to do the things that really matter and spend less time doing the things that weren't necessary but weren't the fun things that everybody enjoyed to do.
Well, I think that's something that you hear from any leader that you talk to. Nobody goes home when they've done everything that they need to do for the day. They go home when they simply can't do any more. And they hope that they got enough done that they're not going to be too far behind in the morning. But it seems like AI is giving us that opportunity to take some of those administrative and bureaucratic tasks and speed them up so that we can spend more time doing the things that are, as you put it, fun. But oftentimes from a professional standpoint, really they're the things that are more valuable. They take a greater degree of expertise and they involve a heuristic aspect that is harder to train a computer model to execute. So that's a great perspective. I had not heard the thaw in the middle aspect before, but I do like that approach. Let's talk a little bit, unfortunately, more bureaucratically about the budget option, because AI comes at a cost. It's come to a transformation cost, as we talked about, a leader cost, a training cost, but it also involves a financial commitment. What can you tell me based off of your experience, not necessarily with AI, but any time that we implement new technology, it's going to come at a cost. How do we budget for this from a mental model? And then what do we need to look at moving forward?
This is a great question. I'm always reminded of Sun Tzu, like, don't outpace your supply lines, essentially. And we tend to see the costs of things up front. And it's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. It costs, I don't know, $1 million to train a model. That's actually the cheap part. It's 3 to 5 times more to run that model over the course of a lifetime. So really what might cost you $1 million on day one is probably going to cost you $3 to $5 million over the 5-year period, because you've got the sustainment, you've got to retrain the models, you have GPU costs. If a API to a large language model may cost, I'm just going to say, 9 cents per query, it's $90,000 a month in perpetuity. So yeah, you've really, if you want to be successful, you not only have to understand the initial costs, but the entire tail, and you really have to tell your budgeting office how much it's going to cost long-term, because if they didn't budget for it, you'll get shut down immediately once they get that first monthly bill from the GPT of $90,000 that they didn't budget for. It's not like they just have it laying around.
Well, and the interesting thing with AI is, and you hinted at this earlier with your freeze the middle, or the frozen middle analogy, was, you know, as people start to adopt it, it may be 90,000 that first month when you run those first million queries. But as the adoption increases, as comfort with the technology improves, you may have a million in the first month, you may have a million and a half in month 12, and at month 36, you may have 7 to 10 billion. So there's not just a linear cost curve on this. As we start to implement these technologies, we're going to find new ways to employ them. You know, soldiers are creative, right? If they can find a way to make a job easier, they will find a way to make a job easier. And so as they figure out the models to do that, I've got to imagine that the long-term cost for this will be something that need to be taken into consideration very seriously, and then either manage the access to those tools in order to control cost, or budget for how that's going to impact the organization. And those are decisions that leaders are having to make at echelon.
Yeah.
You know, I think one of the other things that we routinely see, and we've talked about it here before, LLMs are what everybody talks about. It is the hot topic in artificial intelligence. Everybody can go onto any number of the ChatGPT versions, you know, whether it's Gemini or ChatGPT or Grok or whichever version they're using, and they can ask it questions and they get what seem like reasonable responses back. But there's more to AI than just having a conversation with a computer. Can you tell me a little bit about how we prepare organizations for the different breadth of technology that AI is going to bring in?
Okay, so yeah, people talk about LLMs quite frequently. It's probably the number one thing. And a lot of people just want a general purpose model that could do everything. Answer questions, write reports, analyze data, generate images. And while they do exist, obviously, they're not always the best tool for the job that you may have.
So LLMs, kind of the popular answer, it's what's in the common lexicon right now, but different models are available. And that goes back to your earlier point. As units do those self-assessments and figure out how do they integrate it in, it sounds like there's a wide array of options, and that's going to impact not just their workflow. I assume these come at different costs, and probably reasonable to assume, you know, to your secondary point on the budgeting, that, you know, some of them are going to cost more per query than others.
Yeah, I think, you know, we talk a lot again about LLMs, but you've also got smaller language models that very specific on a narrow domain. And generally speaking, they can outperform LLMs depending on, you know, what the task is, because they're trained on a very specific task. So you don't always need a general purpose model that can answer everything. Sometimes you just need a model that's going to answer the thing you're going to ask about a very specific thing. And those models, because they're not as vast, they're significantly cheaper to access and help reduce the budget. Not everything has to go to that LLM.
But it seems like as you run into these smaller models, it also makes it easier to handle the computation requirements closer to the user, potentially in deployed environments or even some of the newer containerized models that are going to be able to be employed at that point of need for those users. It's interesting that you talk about, you know, these specializations, because you've got some experience in that, right? You're coming from the intelligence community. You've spent a career as a military intelligence professional. So that's an area in which a large language model may not be the right answer for certain things.
Completely agree. So we talked earlier that it could be 9 cents for an LLM, may not give you exactly what you're looking for anyway. But if you've got a specialized small language model, maybe you run it on-prem, could probably be as cheap as 0.04 cents per query. Ain't going to give you a better answer because it's trained specifically on those things that you want. If you're running a million transactions a day, it's a significant cost savings, but it's also significantly better results for what you're looking for. And then really, like, as an Intel professional, it's not like I can just go to ChatGPT on the cloud and ask it for intelligence information. It's not going to be there. I'm going to have to run those models very tailored to what we're looking for on-prem in a secure environment that I can control it, that nobody else has access to it. So the information, national security secrets aren't getting out.
No, that's a really great example. I think that's a perfect way to kind of visualize how, you know, certain models, different tools for different jobs, different weapon systems for different targets. But it seems like that's another one of the big considerations that we're looking at, is making sure that as units are picking their plan for modernization and they're coming up with a deliberate effort to implement AI as part of their units, making sure that they know what tools are going to be right for their organization, for their mission, are very important. You know, we hit a lot of different topics today. We talked about how it needs to be done deliberately. It needs to be timed. You know, leaders need to take a deliberate self-assessment and an honest self-assessment at that. They've got to understand, you know, the data that's going into it. They need to be prepared for those organizational transitions, have a plan for their people. And then we talked about some of the bureaucratic aspects, you know, making sure that you've got the funding necessary, that you're projecting it out accurately and honestly, and that you know what tools you're looking for in your organization. There's a lot that goes into leadership that are really easy to quantify. You put a number on it, come up with a plan, know how to train your people, pick the right model. We've got ways to help that. Are there any closing thoughts in how leaders can think about AI that's going to help them be more successful as they prepare for this transition into the intelligence age?
Yeah, I think, again, you got to start everything just like you would go into a new command position, really thinking through, you know, where you want to go and developing a strategy to get there. And really, it starts with that the upfront boring work. I mean, you're not going to institute anything unless you know where you want to go and have a roadmap to get there.
No, and that's the honest assessment. There needs to be a plan, and something that we do in the Army regularly, make sure we know what that roadmap is, know what the plan is before we go into implementing it. And I think that's how we achieve that goal. That's how we become that 5% that succeeds in implementing.
As a leader, if like when you're instituting these things, you really have to communicate to your workforce, because your workforce is scared. Nobody wants to be outsourced. It is their livelihood at the end of the day you're talking about. And while you may not be trying to replace them, you want to get them on board. If they're going to resist whatever changes you're trying to make in the AI space, like, you're just wasting money and that's no good. But if you as a leader are communicating the vision, communicating the value, that is going to significantly help adoption and hopefully increase your likelihood of success. You know, age right, or an environment right now that's 95% of people are failing.
I think that's the key to it all is our people are first. And if we can get them on board, we'll find a way to be successful. Soldiers will make us be successful. And we've just got to make sure that they have that buy-in on the mission. Sergeant Major, thank you so much for being here today. It's been an excellent conversation, and I appreciate your very valuable time in joining us here for the podcast. I look forward to working with you on this again and seeing where we can move forward on AI together as an organization.
Awesome. Thank you for having me.
I hope you'll join us for our next episode. We're going to build on the conversation we had with Sergeant Major, and we are going to talk about the organizational and institutional changes that need to be implemented in order to ensure that the transition to artificial intelligence is both smooth and effective, and that units are set up for success as they move into the intelligence age. We look forward to seeing you then.